Welcome to Bengals Scribe Session, presented by JosephOtto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here, your Bengals beat writers Paul Daner Jr. and Richard Skinner escort you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium to hear the news, analysis, and observations unfolding within the team from those documenting it daily. All with the sidecar of snark and absurdity you've come to expect. Let's go. We're about to start a party in here. He's made strums like a guitar in here. Looks like we got a good crowd in here. Turn it up, pretend and get lively.
The ball is out. The Bengals have scooped it up. Terrence Newman running back to the 30, 20, 10, 5, touchdown!
It is knocked up in the air. AJ Green makes the catch.
Oh man!
A deflected ball winds up in the hands of AJ Green, and the clock hits zero.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of Scribe Session. We're in the middle of the preseason, halfway home through the preseason. Cannot come soon enough. Paul Daner Jr. Richard Skinner, how are you?
I'm doing fabulous. You know, we are halfway through, so that means we're getting closer to when it really, really matters.
Yes, and this dreadful preseason can be... Let's be honest. The second half of the Bengals-Jets Game 2 of the 2014 preseason, that tape was immediately put in a can, put in the back of a car, shipped directly to the Hall of Fame in Canton.
And then burned. The good part for me was this. I had to do what's called a running game story, which means you kind of do the game as it's going along because we have a deadline we have to fill. And I had to actually send that about a quarter till 10, actually technically before the game ended. That was the good thing for me is I didn't have to kind of look up and watch much of that second half. You, unfortunately, because you were kind of doing live updates throughout, I tweeted a bunch in the first half. You tweeted a lot throughout the game. I wasn't subjected to watching much of that. I'd occasionally look up when I'd hear somebody go, oh, terrible, and notice that something apparently did terrible happen. Yet another incomplete pass. I heard a bunch of holding, personal foul. I mean, there were penalties. It was just a horrid half. Actually, from about the middle of the second quarter on, which is bad football.
It was just bad. The second the starters left for the Bengals,
it was over.
It was a complete train wreck. What should go through the thesaurus on this one? Dumpster fire, train wreck, just
unwatchable.
Unwatchable.
Well, I got a friend of mine who's a huge Bengals fan. He's a season ticket holder. Could not go to Saturday's game because it was his child's birthday party. And I talked to him on Sunday. I said, have you watched any of the game yet? He goes, yeah, I DVR'd. He goes, I watched the first quarter. I go, that's it.
Turn it off.
I said, unless you're really looking to watch something bad. He goes, are you serious? I said, honestly, from that point forward, there's nothing worth watching at all.
Nothing. It was the worst half of quote unquote professional football that I have seen definitely since I've been covering the NFL regularly since 2010. I mean, it was the absolute worst, biggest penalties, bad throws, just, and it went on forever.
Forever. That was the worst
part. There
were
timeouts were taken.
Challenges. Plays were challenged.
What are we challenging? The only thing I'm challenging is that this is actually football.
Somehow Rex Ryan needed to win that game desperately, it felt like, didn't it?
He really wanted to win.
He challenged things. He left his ones in. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. It was weird.
It was a weird, yeah, I'll give you that. It was a very weird game, and 2 hours at the end that I will never get back. Ever. Let's do this. So Jets 25, Bengals 17, for those of you that actually care about the preseason score. More than anything, though, this has kind of all been about the offense right now. This is gonna be an offensive show today.
Very much. Offensive. About offense.
Well, it may be offensive.
It could be.
I don't want to rule that out, Skinny. I'd like to know that I have the ability to be offensive, if I want to. Yeah. Don't tell me that I can't do that.
See, now you're being offensive.
Yeah, exactly. We're gonna focus on the offense this week. Next week, we're going to focus on the defense, so you will be fully prepared when the cuts come down and for who your team is going to be and why certain players are or are not there.
Yeah, just a couple of quick important dates for cuts. And it's weird. They come very quickly back to back.
Yeah, they've changed it a little bit this year. They pushed it back. So you have Tuesday. So you're going to look at Tuesday the 26th, 2 days after the Bengals, because the Bengals play Sunday at Arizona on Sunday Night Football. You can catch it on national television.
Yes, you can.
So you'll have cut to 75 at that point.
And the roster now is 86. Yes.
86 after Chandler Burden from proud LaSalle High School graduate was let go this weekend. Only cut that we've seen thus far as we record this. So the 26, they will have to get down to 75 players, and then they will play Thursday against Indianapolis. That'll be at home. Your conclusion that I know all of you will be filling the seats for at Paul Brown Stadium. And then the 30th, that Saturday, will be the final cutdown day. And the roster needs to get to 53. And then players all need to clear waivers to be eligible for the practice squad. And they can add 8 players to the practice squad at that point. And then you will have your roster. You will have your opening day roster. The only other date with that is then 3 days after that. So that Tuesday, you can officially have – you can place someone on the IR with designation to return.
You can place a player.
A single player.
One player, yes.
And at that point –
And we've got a couple candidates we can talk about.
We do. But so at that point, they have to get through. They have to be on the original 53 so that the players will be exposed. But then you can – put him on IR designation return, which clears a roster spot, and you could theoretically bring somebody back that you cut. That gets dicey sometimes. I'm sure you know when we'll talk about that probably. Maybe with Duke Tobin on Beyond the Stripes.
How about that? Yes.
Plug me.
On there the 26th, on cut day.
Look at that. We're going to have our first cut down day. Duke Tobin will be there at Beyond the Stripes, 7 o'clock at Moorline Lagerhouse, Director of Player Personnel. Look at that. We're getting the plugs in early today.
We're not going to be drilling him about the 11 players that get cut at that time. We got a lot. He's going to be an excellent guest. He is just so – he's a delight to talk to.
He's a delight to talk to and incredibly intelligent about the personnel on this. I mean, he has to be. He's the guy. And so I am beyond jacked for that episode of Beyond the Stripes, which I believe we will have that. We're going to have it in podcast form this year. So whenever the show is done, then we'll have the Beyond the Stripes podcast posted.
Cool.
So if you want to just listen to the show, which
most... you want to see our ugly mugs.
Yeah, I don't
blame
you.
Now, Lindsay, maybe. They may want to see Lindsay Patterson, but us and Doc.
Yeah, no, we're not worth it. We're definitely not worth the price of admission as far as that goes. But so if you want to just listen, as you do, to our lovely scribe session, you also can do that. So maybe have that for you. But first, okay, so let's get where we're at. Monday... We're at Monday right now. We're recording this, so really news of the day. And one of the biggest storyline I think that we followed all camp has been this rookie center conversation. I think we've had fairly loud, animated discussions about it on this podcast multiple times already, so I'm not going to get too loud and animated about it. I'm just going to kind of bring you this. Basically, we have a starter. As far as I'm concerned, I mean, maybe Hugh Jackson and Paul Alexander need to kind of double-check that they're talking about the same things. But I think Hugh just was a little bit reticent to really put it out there. But Paul Alexander was pretty open about it, that Russell Bodine is the guy. They are full systems go ahead with Russell Bodine as a starter. So I want to just – that's an interesting comment in its own. So I was going to bring you right now Paul Alexander, the offensive line coach, talking about a couple of different topics, but the main one in here being – Russell Bodine's his guy. He's going with the rookie in Baltimore.
If you were to start the regular season this Sunday, would you feel confident that Russell's ready to be the starting center?
I think it doesn't matter how I feel. It's what's going to be.
He is going to – I mean, there's no
– Yeah, he hasn't – he's taken the first snap since OTAs, yeah.
So there's no really, I mean, you haven't seen anything that would make you think, shit, we can't.
That kid has so much talent. He's loaded with talent. And he has a tough physical demeanor, and he can block the big nose guards in our division. And he's exactly the type of player we've been looking for. So,
would you try to get Pollock some reps with the ones leading up to that, or are you all systems go with Russell at this stage?
Right now, it's full speed ahead with Bodine.
Yeah.
Harbaugh for backup. That seems to be up in the air, isn't it? Pollock or Trout?
Yeah, I guess we'll have to see how these last two games play.
Yeah. And Pollock's versatility helps.
Yeah, he's a good player. He's a good player. Pollock's a good player. Yeah. So is Trevor. Yeah.
Yeah, right, right. He gets a tough call. That's a, yeah.
Harder on them than us.
Yeah. Is there something you'd like to see? Well, I mean, obviously, there's always something you want to see better. But a couple of things in the next couple of weeks, you want to see Russell get polished a little bit better.
Yeah, I've shared those with him, and I don't want to share with anyone else.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, obviously, the snapping is one issue, but it seems like it's not a consistently bad thing. It's just all of a sudden it rears its ugly head.
It's more a matter of. It's not a mechanical thing.
Right.
It's an experience thing. Lots of things happening fast, and then you're making calls, and then all of a sudden you short circuit, you know, and you get through that. I mean, they get through that. So
there you have it, I guess. I mean, there was no actual Bodine is the starter table.
I phrased the question just with the hopes of getting some reaction from him, which was, if the regular season were to start this week. And the reason I ask that is, this is really the game that I think determines who does start, because you're not going to get anything out of that fourth preseason game, for goodness sakes. Russell Bodine may not even play in that fourth preseason game.
Right.
You know, most of the starters really don't play in that fourth preseason game. So that's why I thought it was important to ask. Now, I know it's funny. You did your rosterology in the paper on Sunday.
Yeah.
And did a great job. Actually, I'm sorry. Take it back today for Monday.
Right.
And did a great job with that. And I agreed with almost probably 97% of what you did. The one I was going to tell you I didn't agree with is you still were kind of on the fence about Russell Bodine being the starter. You're not quite there.
But that was before we heard this.
Right.
Today.
No, yeah. But you haven't been quite there with it. I think it's been him all along. And whether they're force feeding that or not, as he said, that's all systems are go with him. We're going forward. This guy is our center. And I don't think they're turning back unless he's a complete failure early in the regular season.
I felt like, and we talked to Mike Pollock about this earlier, and he said the plan all along was to make sure he was healthy, because he's coming back from his knee injury. Make sure he was healthy. And once he was healthy, then start moving him around. So the second week of camp comes, and sure enough, there he is working as a backup at center. So I thought, well, we'll start to see
the next progression is him taking reps with ones.
And he was in the game against the Jets for a little bit, not with the ones, but he came in at the end of the second half, in the second quarter, I'm sorry, and was working at center for a few series there. So we saw that. So I thought, as I think why we were asking these questions, the general progression will be, okay, well, maybe next week he'll work some with the ones and you'll have your competition. You can kind of make a decision of where he's at. Because it's not like he's sitting down like Jeff Saturday's in the room here, okay? I mean, he's never really even played center outside of some wash-up snaps and things like that. He was a center all in college, and that's all fine and grand. And we've had this discussion before about why maybe he should be the guy in there. But I at least expected him to have more of a chance at it, and we just haven't really seen that.
The thing that surprised me, and I asked him actually, and I'm doing a story for Wednesday's paper kind of on Bodine being the starter, you know, what it means to him, and I talked to Mike Pollock about that, and I said, would you like to get some snaps with the ones? And he said, yeah, you know, just to get a feel for it. I'm a little surprised they haven't done that just to get – you got to have a just-in-case plan, do you not?
You have to. I mean, if first half comes out at Baltimore,
and he's a disaster. And he may be great. I mean, we're not saying he's going to be a disaster.
Not saying it's true, but when you have a rookie, that is a huge variable in that. I mean, a massive variable.
Well, it's funny. The guy who saw, unfortunately, the blitz packages of the Jets, which we'll get to here in a little bit as well, didn't make a lot of people happy, was Mike Pollock at center. They really didn't show that to Bodine. So he's really not going to see everything that a defense throws at him as a line caller and a line adjuster until that very first game in Baltimore. And boy, that could just be a huge, oh my gosh, moment. May not be. I mean, Bodine just, there's a lot to like about the guy.
Yeah.
Just comes off as a solid dude, you know, kind of stoic to some degree, very physical, very big.
Yeah.
And you know, again, they traded up because they targeted him.
Yeah.
For goodness. Or at least Paul Alexander targeted him.
Definitely.
To be the guy. And so I understand why they're doing it, but I'm a little surprised that we've not seen Pollock get some snaps with the ones, get some reps with the ones.
I just thought it would be a competition. I mean, for as much as we hear about competition,
and it hasn't
around
been close.
Here, there hasn't really been one at all. And so it makes all the sense in the world that they would come out and say this. I'm just a little surprised by that, as well as Mike Pollock proved to play last year, and all you saw from him for it to now be a situation where they just entrust the rookie. I mean, and let's take you back a couple years. Jeff Fain brought in when Kyle Cook got injured and started the first two games that season and was a disaster. And Trevor Robinson was starting as an undrafted guy by week three there, and he came in and acquitted himself fairly well. Point being in that is that was two games, and it was, boom, that's over. That experiment is done. It's time to find something else because that's not working. The same way that you were saying he needs reps with the ones is for that possibility right there. You have to at least be open to it and have Mike Pollock more ready at that point, step in case something goes wrong.
Now, the one interesting dynamic here is you've got Paul Alexander saying what we just heard on the one hand, and you talked to Hugh Jackson also after practice on Monday. We'll get to that here in just a second, too, because that sounds like it leaves the door open a little bit to maybe changing that.
Yeah, well, you know what? Let's just bring that in. Let me just bring in Hugh. Here's when I asked Hugh about Mike Pollock and if he was going to get some as some background, both these conversations were happening simultaneously.
In different parts.
In different parts of the interview area. So we neither of us had an idea either of these were going on as far as what was being said on opposite sides. But anyway, I'll just bring you what I was asking Hugh at the same moment that Skinny was talking to Paul A. Now you guys have started to mix Pollock in there at center a little bit in private. Do you want to get him in with the first team some reps at all to get a better look at him at center as well? Or?
I think, you know, we're gonna play it out and see how it goes. But, I mean, he's a returning player and played here and played well for us. So I think, you know, like anybody, he deserves an opportunity to see what he can do in there with the guys. And we'll see how that all unfolds. But I think Pollock is very important to us and what we do. So I think, you know, I'm sure Marvin will figure that one out as we move forward.
Yeah.
So then there's that, which was, to me, it was just Hugh maybe having the exact same thoughts that Paul A is having, but doesn't want to give you don't want to lose Mike Pollock, you know, and you want to keep him coming. There's no reason for him. There was maybe no reason to make it quite that obvious,
well,
even though it kind of is.
But I'll also say this, and I know this is going to sound like I'm putting words in Hugh's mouth, and I don't mean to do that because that's never fair for anybody. But you also got to wonder what's his comfort level having a rookie center in there too, with
right.
In theory his offense. I mean, I know it's part Paul Alexander's offense, part James Urban's offense, part Kyle Kett. But really, at the end of the day, the coordinator is the head coach of that offense. And at the end of the day, he usually – I used a Hugh right there, end of the day one for him. He still has some say in that. I'm sure he goes – you know, Paul says, hey, he's my guy. He's the doing the best. You probably will take him at that and say, okay. But in the back of your mind as a coordinator, you're thinking – boy, if he doesn't work out, I've got to have a second plan. I can't have him throwing me two bad shotgun snaps, making two bad line calls when I think I've got the right play called in that set, that circumstance, or Andy made the right check and we were going to hit a home run, yet my center snapped it 5 miles over my quarterback's head. He's got to have a little bit of that in his mind.
Yeah, and it should be said, Russell Bodine has been the starting center for what has been
OTA's on.
And a torching of defenses for the first two games.
Yeah, you're right about that.
So, I mean, let's give credit where credit's due.
And he's had, in game situations, first two game situations, one semi-bad snap. It was a little hot and off to the side for Jason Campbell. Mm-hmm. Campbell did catch it. So let's give him a little benefit of that. He's had some issues in practice at times. Had it, I think, in the controlled scrimmage, had a bad snap. It rears its head at weird times. But in the two-game situations, you're right, Paul, he's been part of first-team offenses that have just torched opponents.
Yeah, and so you've got to give some credit there. And, I mean, he had a holding call and was pretty much victimized on a third-and-one run that Gio got blown up in the backfield that forced a field goal.
And he admitted to me on that call, actually, they were in a little bit of a front. He said a kind of a bare front where they had people walking around, and he didn't take the full blame, but you could tell, I think he thought, hey, I might have missed the call there where I just didn't recognize what I needed to recognize. So he's been good about some of that stuff.
But all that said, they've with Russell Bodine and Andy Dalton as a combo, they've had four drives. Four scores for 20 points. So if you're going to say all the things that you worry about, you also have to point out that he's been part of a group that's acquitted itself really well. So that's that discussion. I'm rookie centered out, skinny. I feel like this is. I feel like we've talked about this more than any. It's just because it is odd. You have a fourth rounder starting in such an important position. It needs to be discussed. Well, just, I think it's the biggest question mark on this offense.
Yeah, just to put a bow on this, and we'll move on to another topic. It's as important and as difficult as a rookie quarterback coming in to start right away.
I agree.
That's how tough that can be. And usually, you know, you're not going to have a fourth round rookie quarterback play, are you? I mean, barely Andy Dalton in the second round is about the furthest down you're going to have a rookie quarterback play in this league, unless there's a multitude of injuries. So that, it is a big deal that you got
it's
a rookie.
It's fairly rare. I mean, it's fairly rare, and honestly. The Bengals can look back to Trevor Robinson as the only thing that they've had really in this area when you're putting it on somebody that quick. And they didn't want to do that quick. But they've been pretty adamant from the very beginning.
You have to go all the way back to the Bob Johnson era when he was the first Bengal drafted as the center. He was a rookie center starting. So maybe they're just kind of hearkening back to those days.
And this portion of the program brought to you by Skinny Shows His Age again. Every week we have one of these moments.
I know. I that's why. I've got Bengals historian written all over me.
The Bob Johnson era just got broke out here for all of you listening at home. You know, I feel like our Bob Johnson era listeners are big podcast fans.
Oh, huge. They know all about how to handle a podcast.
The only thing they love more than podcasts are vines and GIFs. I'm pretty sure.
And they think GIFs are G-I-F-T-S, by the way.
Yeah, GIFs, yeah.
And vines are drinking wine, so that's what they know.
So let's move on a little bit. I do want to talk a little bit about this offense. And so I did my little put myself a little research project today on the last 6 years, essentially counting this year, how offense has fared in the first stringers in the first two games, and as you would expect, knowing what we've seen thus far, this year's team was off the charts compared to the other ones. They've been on fire. Andy Dalton had as good of a game as you possibly can, quite literally. 158.3 passer rating is perfect. 8 for 8, 144, a touchdown, no picks. You really can't ask for more from Andy Dalton, who, preseason or not, looks fantastic.
They've had the four drives you mentioned, four scores, but they've also racked up, and I'm doing this off the top of my head, I believe 253 yards in those four series. The only series they really, if you can argue, they didn't succeed in was the one after they got the Terrence Newman interception, didn't convert on the third and one play where you talked about Bodine may have missed the block, and they were able to kick a field goal because they had the short field. The other three drives were fairly lengthy scoring drives thanks to a couple of big pass plays. Yep. You know, the first one to A.J. Green in Kansas City, then the other night hitting Sanu for the touchdown, also then hitting A.J. Green up the sideline to set it up. So they've also hit some big plays in those four drives. Four drives and 253 yards, and it's ones against ones. Yeah, it's preseason. I'm going to have to throw that caveat. You always have to throw that caveat out there, but man, you can't do better than that.
No, you can't. And so there's – what does it mean? Ugh, I don't know. I don't know if it means anything.
Yeah, it does. Here's what it does mean. It means that at least Andy Dalton will carry some level of belief maybe from fans that – maybe he is making steps forward. Now, because the flip side would have been if he'd have come out in these four series, gone 4 for 50, if he'd have gone Eli Manning in these four series, who's been just dreadful in the short time he's played in the preseason. I mean, almost epically dreadful. And I'm sure in New York, if you're a Giants fan or you're Tom Coughlin, it's, hey, it's just the preseason. He'll be fine. Well, maybe he won't be. And if this had been Andy Dalton, you know what the reverse would have been, Paul. If this had been Andy Dalton being Eli Manning and the numbers he's putting up, it would have been, wow, how in the world could you have signed him to this contract? Oh, you saw what he's done in the playoffs. Now he's regressed even further. The flip side is, boy, look at his mechanics. His mechanics look refined. He worked a lot in the offseason with that. Look how much better he's not just complete, but the way he's throwing the football. I think that's a positive, and just for him to take that confidence level. And you asked him the other night, he's having fun with this.
Yeah, he did talk a lot about that. I mean, that's Hugh Jackson's opinion, was that he thinks a lot of this is just Andy's really having fun, and that comes from the results. The one thing that Hugh did say when I was asking him about if any of this means anything, I'm just going to read you this quote from Hugh when I asked him if it means anything. He said, obviously you don't want negative results. You want the positive results. You got to do things to gain credibility from the players every day. If anything, we've done that. They go, this is our process. This is how we do it. If we do it right, this is what it leads to. That part I'm excited about. End quote from Hugh. I thought that was very well put. That's the other dynamic.
The results, it's his new offense to some degree.
The results are not anywhere near as important as the process. The process and belief and credibility of the process is really where the advantage comes in here when you're talking about what any of this really means, how well the offense is.
Because let's just say if they had failed, yeah, you can point to some of the players for that failure, but then it would have been maybe the players going, Hugh's trying to change a lot of this stuff, and man, it's not working, and holy crap, that, you know, is this what's going to happen in the regular season to us? The flip side is exactly what he's talking about is, hey, he's bought himself a little cred here that old Hugh, all the stuff he's going over with these guys, he might know what he's doing. Let's really buy into this, and that stuff can go a long way.
Yeah, it can. So the offense is great. We learned that. We've got a pretty much essentially a decision at center. And the other really news that's kind of popping around is a load of injuries. I mean, guys were just dropping like flies the other night. The good news is most don't seem to be very serious. Rex Burkhead is your most serious injury. We don't have an official word on that yet, but it doesn't look good. Rex was in the locker room today. Brace on the knee, crutches. All the standard
kind of
stuff.
Declined to talk about it, yeah, because it's a kind of a sensitive area that you want, you know, Marvin Lewis to be the one to say technically what it officially is and, yeah, how long he officially is out. So he's a really good guy, and you could tell that he was kind of uncomfortable and he kind of begged off because he said he had to go get some treatment, which I think he probably did. But that seems like it's going to be one that he's not going to be back very quickly.
No, and we'll see exactly how serious it is. If it's if it's a year ender, or it might be maybe half a year or something like that. So a very good possibility that we're going to see the IR designated return tag on Rex Burkhead.
Which means, and let's go through that process just very quickly. We did a little bit last week because Marvin Jones is kind of a candidate for that as well. It means that you are technically out for 8 weeks.
And you're out for 8 weeks.
You can return. And for the Bengals, that's 8 weeks and actually 7 games because they have a bye week inside that 8-week window. So he would miss 7 games if you put him on this designated return list. You can only put one player on there. Mm. We both talked about this last week, but just to reiterate, neither one of us believes Marvin Jones will go on this list. We think Marvin will stay on the 53-man because he's only going to miss probably...
Unless there's some sort of setback.
Right. He's probably going to miss 3 regular season games. You have the bye week, and I think a logical target is he comes back for the New England game, which is game number 4, agreed, week number 5. So they'll keep him on the 53-man. But that Rex Burkhead, yeah, if it's not completely serious, you put him on that. It means he can come back after 8 weeks and 7 games. And if it's worse than that, then you're just going to IR him anyway.
Right, and because you can only put one guy on, it's something you got to think about. Mm-hmm. How important is Rex Burkhead to your plans? And also combine that with how serious is the injury. Because if the injury
is a 10 to 12 week injury.
If you're thinking 10 to 12 weeks, and then in week 2, Carlos Dunlap breaks his foot, well, you're kind of wishing you had that IR designated return tag.
It's an important tag because, again, it's also for those – it's 8 weeks from whenever you decide to do that.
Whenever you decide to do that.
And you can do it with one.
You know, is Rex Burkhead important enough? I mean, Andrew Hawkins was the guy who saw it happen to last year, but I think everybody assumed that it was correct that Hawkins was important enough. They really have high hopes for Burkhead, and I think – but – at the end of the day, he was your third or fourth running back.
Correct.
So, I mean, what are we really talking about here?
You're talking about a special teams guy who's probably in a game not going to get many carries, if any.
Right, if any. So, in some games, might be inactive. I mean, he was only active one game last year. Now, in granted, their running back situation is a little different, but not that much.
No.
I mean, it's the same situation this year where you would still have 3 guys in front of him. So, I don't know. We'll see what they do with that. That'll be an interesting thing to follow as far as injuries go. Some of the other injuries you run through,
Tyler Eifert is lingering. Yeah.
It's what happened with Tyler Eifert was basically, of course, everybody remembers he had a stinger, a neck issue at the end of last year.
Was made inactive for the last game because of that.
And that gets scary when you get in that area. You never know what can happen with that stuff. Had a shoulder injury that popped up right around OTAs.
In early June.
Not connected, according to he said. He told us at that point, not connected to anything that was going on at the end of the year. Came back about the first 2 weeks of camp, went through it, and then all of a sudden...
Played the Kansas City game, caught
a pass. Played the Kansas City game, and then all of a sudden you have a shoulder injury creeps up. a reaggravation of it. I want to, you know what, I'm going to bring in Tyler Eifert right now because I talked to him about his injury and some of the frustrations of what this offseason has really been like for him health-wise. Here's a little bit of Tyler Eifert talking about his situation.
How do you feel?
I feel good.
Yeah.
Yep.
You're banged up or whatever. Was it just what happened? We never really kind of heard of boys that had your shoulder.
Yeah, it's my shoulder. It's been kind of bothering me. You know, kind of bleeding over from OTAs a little bit.
Yeah.
Just kind of reaggravated a little bit, but you know, it's nothing. Nothing that'll require surgery or anything like that. So
yeah,
not too worried about it.
Are you thinking that you'll be able to get in and get some snaps on Saturday or Sunday, I guess?
I'm listed as day-to-day, so yeah. It's just, you know, when the medical staff says, you know, well, it's not what, I mean, once I'm comfortable and once they say, you know, it's, you're not putting yourself at any more risk and, you know, and then I go out there and test on the field and, you know, there's a whole process we go through, so. Once I get cleared through all those, then I'll be good to go. But at the same time, making sure we're smart with, you know, obviously these games don't count, but I'd obviously like to get some work, you know, for the regular season.
Has this been kind of a frustrating offseason? You've had a little thing here, a little thing there, and you haven't really been able to kind of get in a rhythm and get involved.
Yeah, I mean, it's as annoying in spring, you know. Rehab gets annoying. So, you know, it's just getting back out there, and then the start of camp, those first 3 weeks or 2 weeks or whatever, you know, I felt good running around and felt healthy and in shape and strong, and now I'm back watching for a little bit, I guess. So it's a little frustrating, but at the same time, you know, you gotta get the body right.
Are you worried about Tyler Eifert?
I am, and there's two things to that. He was so good for the first few weeks of camp, and he was the star of that controlled scrimmage. And it looked like, wow, they have added. When they drafted him, this was supposed to be another weapon. He really never became that weapon last year. Became an okay player, and that right. happens with rookies in this league. But he looked like he had taken that the step in the evolution. Man, he's going to be a huge weapon down the seam, double move stuff. He's fast enough to do that. He's still, you know, a good target in red zone, third and six, third and five, third and four situations. I wasn't worried initially because I'm the one last week that saw him on the field kind of walk. I said, "You okay?" And he said, "Yeah, I just kind of dinged my shoulder." Very informal. Thought, okay. Wasn't in practice the next day. And then didn't play Saturday. Then you obviously talked to him as we heard right there. And just looking at his eyes today when you were talking to him, Paul, he just, I know he's saying what he needs to say, but he didn't seem overly sure. Now, the good part was he was at least out in stretching and may have taken part in some very light drills today, but did not have his helmet in the portion we saw. So we don't believe he probably took part in you know, whatever 11-on-11 stuff that they did. Okay, so now you're into another week leading into the most important preseason game. I am worried. I need to see him, I guess, play Sunday to say, okay, I think everything's okay, and see him play well on Sunday.
You know what word I don't like? Re-aggravated.
Yes.
That's the worst. Re-aggravated means lingering, nagging, not going away. Mm-hmm. And if you can go and rest for as long as he was rested through all of OTAs,
and then you start getting
and a month
around.
Off, and then you had 2 weeks, and all of a sudden it's back. To me, what's going to happen when you only have a couple of days off and you start getting into the season, it really gets physical.
Well, and he's gone through really limited contact. I mean, the Bengals have done very limited contact in practice. Now, sometimes linemen will hit, and when he's in blocking circumstances, he's hitting a little bit. But you're not hitting receivers. He didn't play a long time in the Kansas City game. I guess it could have occurred then, and for all I know, took a bad pop. But you're right. You haven't gotten to the physical portion of this, which is playing a full game at full speed with full collisions on every play, basically.
Yeah, I'm slightly nervous about this, and I've been on board the Tyler Eifert's going to break out bandwagon, but. You know, I just it's worth keeping an eye on.
Well, because you do a lot of two tight end sets, and this is no. We both love Ryan Hewitt, but Ryan Hewitt is not ready to be a second tight end on a full-time basis in this league. Alex Smith's day in that regard is come and gone. He's fine maybe if you keep him around and he's a short yardage third and two tight end to block or maybe slip out in the flat on occasion. Orson Charles isn't close to that either. So you don't, if you have Tyler Eifert down for a period of time in the regular season, goodbye two tight end sets unless you're going to run the football a bunch. You're going to go either three wides or you're going to go back to having that fullback H-back in the backfield, which makes Ryan Hewitt all that much more important if that's what you're going to have to do. But it takes a weapon out of the passing game, what looked to be a huge weapon early in camp.
Yeah, he did. And so that's... that's where we're at. Some of the other injuries, Darquez Dennard, Jeremy Hill. Hill back in
Hill
practice.
Back, Dennard not.
Dennard not. We'll keep an eye on that. You know, anytime your first-round pick is dinged up and doesn't come right back, you wonder.
The good part to him is and this, I don't want this to sound wrong, because both you and I think he's really good. The coaching staff loves him, raves about him. But you're not at a desperate need where you have to plug him in. You have three corners ahead of him in the nickel set, and that's not because he hasn't played well. It's because it's Terrence Newman, Leon Hall, and Adam Jones. So that's at least the good part there. The one big surprise today, though, Paul, to me, I had no idea about Dane Sand. Dane Sansabacher, to my knowledge, on Saturday did not get hurt, but apparently he did because he didn't practice today either.
Yeah, you never – this could be – it kind of reeks of concussion protocol.
Well, he got hit, if you remember, on the kickoff return and fumbled the football. I'm not here to tell you that's exactly when it happened, but something obviously happened in that game, and really it was never announced. He's out for the rest of the game because of.
Yeah. We'll look at more on that probably tomorrow, Wednesday. When the locker room opens back up. But, yeah, I think that was a surprise to everybody. Nobody really expected that. That can happen like that, where these guys that get concussions, nobody really knows
until afterwards. Yeah, right.
And then all of a sudden they show up on the side. And the fact that he was completely not dressed at all tells you that maybe that's one of those things where he's got to go through that.
And
so,
that can linger for a week or two or maybe even longer, depending on how bad it is.
And could, you know, and even more reverberations down the roster. And you know what? Let's do that. Let's get into
one more. Jason Campbell also was back.
Oh yeah, Jason Campbell, he's back. So looks there's a good chance that he'll come back and play.
Yeah, I
would imagine on Sunday, which is a relief for anybody that likes watchable football. because the Matt Scott Tyler Wilson show is,
and you may not even have to use either one of those guys on. And Tyler Wilson was not back today. It may be Andy for the first half, first series of the second half, and you could mop up with Jason Campbell.
A quarter and a half, and then
a series for Scott,
a series or two for Scott. Yeah. I mean that'd be fine with me. So let's do this. Let's go delving into our world of the roster. And we'll talk about the offense.
I love you. Did a good job. You did a really good job with this. By the way, you could see a great the fine folks that put together the graphic stuff at the Inquirer did a nice job with kind of a mini slideshow that it's not one of those that you got to. It's not an annoying. So it's literally you can click, you go to the next position, but it's a position by position group, guys that you think are definitely in, definitely out, and on the bubble at each position group. And then you got a nice little explanation for why you think what you thought.
Right, exactly.
And
so,
I agree with you on everything but one.
Everything but one. Everything but one. That's. I'm surprised it was only one.
Maybe two.
I thought there
maybe,
might be.
Maybe
might,
two.
Yeah, there's a few, and these will change because as something like.
An injury.
Even not one that's going to make a guy on IR or anything, but something like a concern with Dane Sansabacher, and all of a sudden you're piling that up with the Marvin Jones and everything else.
And the Tyler Eifert.
Maybe we need to keep seven receivers. And then if you keep seven receivers, then all of a sudden it's got to come out of somebody else's pocket.
Yep.
And you're trying to figure out where it is. So let's go through the offense and talk about what we think about all of them.
And we're going to do defense next week.
We'll do defense next week, so you'll get the all-defensive show next week. This week, we're all offense all the time. So let's start with quarterbacks. I thought this was the easiest group to peg, and it didn't take me all that long to throw it together.
But you did. The one thing that people, I think, and I get asked this question, I got asked this question yesterday about A.J. McCarron again. You've already done a nice story explaining the situation with A.J. McCarron, but that's one I don't think people understand. I think they really think that he's going to be on this roster as the third quarterback. It's not going to happen. But the two quarterbacks for sure, Andy Dalton and Jason Campbell, and then McCarron is as part of this in the mix, and explain that a little bit.
McCarron will be on the non-football injury list, which is essentially the PUP. So he will be ineligible for the first 6 weeks of the season. And then you could you can possibly bring him back after that. You hope his arm is
fine.
Or
you just let him linger.
Or he can hang out there till week 15 at the latest, and then you got to make a decision. So you have from week 6 to week 15 to make a decision, but he doesn't count against the roster. So at that point, he's here, he's around, he is throwing.
He gets a redshirt year, and that's, yeah. I mean, which I know that sounds simplistic.
Which is what he was going to get anyway.
Yes, exactly.
And if worst case scenario happens, they can activate him. If Andy Dalton gets hit in the knee in week 7, you activate A.J. McCarron and beat Jason Campbell's backup, period.
Right.
So that's where you're at with that. I think Tyler Wilson makes practice squad.
I wasn't thinking about the
health factor. Because
when he initially came here, I thought it was nothing more than just a camp arm, and that's pretty much what he was. Honestly, the other night, he didn't throw the ball badly. He was put in really tough positions. I think he started drives at the 12, the 5, and the 12.
And you like to have another quarterback on the practice
squad. Yeah, absolutely.
Because you can always develop somebody.
And, again, he can run some scout stuff if you need. I mean, there's some things he can do in that regard.
And so, you know, why not have Tyler Wilson?
Yeah.
I think I'd take him. I think his ceiling's better than Matt Scott.
Yeah, and if you expose him, I doubt a club picks him up because then they have to stick him on a roster. So I don't. That's not going to probably.
And maybe
happen.
They don't. I'm not going to be debating practice squad.
No, I'm with you.
There are better ways that we all should be living our lives rather than
debating practice squad
players. But I will say, I think he probably ends up playing on the practice squad just because. Hey, why not? The guy had all kinds of potential coming out of Arkansas, so why not give him a shot to hang on the practice squad? Quarterbacks, I thought, was the easiest position to go through overall. Let's go to running backs. It gets a bit tricky now.
Because of the Burkhead injury.
So I have in Giovanni Bernard, Jeremy Hill, Cedric Pierman, and Rex Burkhead, with Ben Jarvis Green-Ellis getting cut, James Wilder, and fullback Nikita Whitlock on the practice squad. Now,
And the latter two are definite. That part, let's get that part out of
the practice squad.
Yes.
Wilder and Whitlock are perfect practice squad candidates.
Yes.
They need to teach Wilder how to run lower.
He does run straight up and down.
And they need to teach Nikita Whitlock how to be a fullback.
Let me just tell you, though, the kid is
pop.
He's had two of the more impressive kickout blocks in camp while leading people around the end.
There's some hope for him for sure, but he was a defensive tackle. Defensive tackle at Wake Forest, and so he's a project. He's perfect. Made for the practice squad. So Nikita Whitlock, I think, ends up there. So you're talking about how the Burkhead injury could change things. To me, what we talked about, you figure out if he needs to be IR'd completely or IR'd with designation, whatever that, either way, that Ben Jarvis is here. And from people we've talked to, Mike Brown was leading the charge to keep Ben Jarvis rather than letting him go a long time ago. And this is exactly why. I think it was smart.
Well,
I thought it was a smart move the whole time.
Agree.
It's maybe a little unfair to Benny, right? Is that what you're going to say?
No. What I was going to say is he has been the second running back in both of the first two preseason games.
Yeah, but there
and
you know
I know
what he
that
is, though,
I
right?
know I get that.
You,
but
he comes in for one series and takes maybe one hand off, and then he goes to the bench.
Yes, he does. And then Jeremy Hill comes in the game.
Right.
And I think Jeremy Hill is obviously a great downhill runner and etc. You know, he got a little dinged up on Saturday too. Is that something that affects him? No, he's right back at practice today. Good sign there. I just think you keep Ben Jarvis because of. Not just the whole Burkhead insurance policy. You know, I don't. Maybe Jeremy Hill doesn't handle running it 15 to 18 times a game. You know, you can say Gio's got a lot of power down by the goal line, and we saw it the other night, and that's all well and good. But are you going to run him 22, 24 times a game? Are you going to run him on every third and one, slam him into the line with that body? I don't think so. Somebody's got
a problem with Ben Jarvis being your third and one back. Because let's also talk about this. Where does Ben Jarvis fit on the special teams?
He doesn't.
He's not a special teams guy. That was what that position is supposed to bring you. So if he's going to be there,
Pierman does.
He better bring you some value in some capacity if you're going to keep him on the roster.
Yes.
So at that point, I think Ben Jarvis spells Jeremy Hill for a series or two a game and comes in on third and one or your goal. Maybe he's when you're goal line set. I mean, the guy's that's been his MO for a long time. Yeah.
I have no problem with that.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't either. I wouldn't either. So that's probably the way. I mean, the question is going to be how do they sneak Burkhead onto the IR designation if that's what they go for? They don't need to sneak him anywhere if they IR him for the year because they can IR him before the
correct.
Cut.
That's it.
So
they can IR him Wednesday for goodness sakes.
Right. So we'll see how that plays out. But somehow. I think this slams Ben Jarvis Green-Ellis back into the four
no
that
question.
Will stay. So let's move it. Okay, moving along. The tight ends, hybrid H-back, fullback position that is really doesn't have
a
proper
name. See, I think you
have
to separate this a little bit, but I know you kind of grouped them together, and that's okay.
Yeah, I think the H-back, it's half part running back, it's part tight end. I don't even know where to put it.
Well, the H-back... Well,
Eifert is basically an H-back. I mean, he's the starting H-back.
But he never lines up in the back. He doesn't line up there as a lead.
Sometimes.
Well, but very rarely do you see him be the lead blocker in that circumstance. I mean, to me, the H-back in this set is almost really a fullback, and that's where you determine, do you keep a fullback or do you keep an H-back? We already have determined there's only one fullback in camp, and that's Nikita Whitlock. He's going to the practice squad. So without him, Ryan Hewitt stays on this roster as the H-back. He started on Saturday night. Actually, technically, he started the football game.
And took a ton of team snaps.
Because they started in the offset eye with him as the H-back lead fullback spot, and they love him, and he's been done a great job. I think he's an automatic stick. Orson Charles, the only way I think he sticks on this football team is really if somehow this injury to Hewitt lingers, or the injury to Eifert lingers enough that they decide, hey, we need to keep three real tight ends, the H-back being Hewitt, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, I don't even see that. I don't see a way. It's a project that I think that the coaches, I'm not going to say they've given up on him, but I think in the back of their heads.
He gets less and less reps in important circumstances.
He really does. And you know.
And Marvin's comments last week, which we heard, that almost basically shut it down.
You want to really quickly put yourself in the doghouse with a coach. Do what you did in the offseason.
Mm-hmm. When you're already on thin ice.
When you're already on thin ice. And you know Marvin's got a really low tolerance for that, because that's a big part of him turning the culture around like he did with the reboot in 11. He's not having that. And so the fact that he's been sort of quickly discarded and Ryan Hewitt has been put on this pedestal, I think is a combination of Orson Charles on a number of levels,
And
how good Ryan Hewitt's been. I mean, Ryan Hewitt has been great. So I think that's pretty, you know, outside of we have injury fluctuation. Right now, I felt pretty solid about that one. That one actually felt pretty easy as well. Okay, wide receivers.
Dun, dun, dun.
This is becoming the most confusing group for me.
Because do you keep six, do you keep seven? Do you keep Marvin Jones, do you keep Marvin Jones? Put up Marvin Jones on designated IR, designated for return.
What has happened with James Wright? What's going on with James Hamilton? Wright?
He got hurt.
And Ryan
Whalen. Ryan Whalen sneaks back into the picture. Let's start from the automatic locks.
Here we go.
Number 18 is an automatic lock.
Number 18, I can tell you, breaking news here on Scribe Session, AJ Green will make the team. And I'm going to stretch it further. He will start at Baltimore. You heard it here first.
That's a stretch. I want to tell you this, because this is my first year on the beat. I covered it, for those who don't know, many, many moons ago. First time I've really seen AJ Green on a daily basis this up close and personal. He is so much better than I even thought, and I already thought he was really, 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 really good.
Yeah.
Just the hands are off the charts. He's just so
every day he does something that makes you say wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow. Yes.
AJ Green is solid. Marvin Jones, as Marvin Lewis said, is not going to be on any lists, so he's solid. Mohamed Sanu is in the bank. Etienne Sonsenbacher is fine.
As long as he's not hurt.
As long as that's not a – we don't know what exactly – if it is concussion protocol, I'm not worried
about
it.
All right, so those are four right there, but one of those will not play for the first three or four weeks, and that being Marvin Jones because of the injury.
Marvin Jones.
Okay.
So after that, you have – here's the names that will kick around. Brandon Tate, James Wright, who's the seventh-round draft pick out of LSU, who did not catch a ball last year, special teams guy. You have Ryan Whalen, and you have Kobe Hamilton.
Now, and then you have a couple of Colin Lockett, Jasper Collins.
Yeah, Jasper Collins and Colin Lockett, who are not going to make this team.
I like Jasper Collins, though, but he's not going to make this team.
He's not going to make this team. We do like him. He's a nice man. So let's talk about these guys. Brandon Tate, I think is safe.
I do, too.
I really do.
I know people listen to this podcast right now, the fact that you and I
agree on
that. Someone
just turned it off or just threw something.
they don't.
Kicked a cat.
Look, whether we think Brandon Tate's a good returner or a good receiver or not, it doesn't matter. The coaches do. They feel safe and comfortable. And let me just tell you, if you have a guy that catches the ball first, isn't going to put it on the ground in the return game, yeah, he's not the most dynamic cat on the planet. You can see with your own eyes like I can see. He's not the
safe.
Most. But he's safe. And coaches like safe over everything else.
They don't turn the ball over. Don't do anything stupid. And they have plenty of chance for electricity in the return game if they want to throw Adam Jones back there occasionally.
And they did it the other night
as
in the Jets game.
As I've heard said to me multiple times, by people in this building, you can do worse than Brandon Tate. And that's and that's not mean you should accept that, but I'm saying there ain't anything better in the building.
Adam Jones is, but is a third corner, but you're not
you
gonna put him back
in. Yeah, it doesn't use matter. He doesn't affect Brandon yes. Tate that way. So now that said,
and Sanzenbacher could be as well, but if he's going to be your third receiver for a while, you're probably not going to put him back there either. So you go back. The one thing that's been interesting to Brandon Tate is just watching him at least during practices. He's been pretty good as a wide receiver in practice settings, and he caught a touchdown pass in the Kansas City game out of the slot. So it gives you a little he sticks. I'm with you.
He's not sticks. Even, I don't think he's an issue to not make the team. I think he sticks, but it's just one of those things where for whatever reason he's been here for however long, and has never been able to break through as a receiver.
No, he's not. You're right. And there's a reason for that.
There is reason for that. Yeah. So I think he's fine. So really, what we're talking about is one. But is it maybe two spots?
Or is it even three spots because of the Marvin Jones injury circumstance?
Yeah, I think they wouldn't go more than seven. I'd be surprised if they'd even go seven. So James Wright, who made that nice touchdown catch in Kansas City, I have him in right now because when Marvin Jones is down, at least you're getting value as a special teamer. And then if you need him in a pinch to come in and play a receiver spot.
But you don't. I mean, really.
But you really don't. Yeah, there's almost no situation that I can think of, barring everybody going down, that James Wright would really be in there playing. So when Marvin Jones is out, at least you're adding a special
team. To me, that's that last wide receiver has got to be not just a he's got to be a special teams contributor, not just a guy who's playing special teams. Kobe Hamilton is playing them at least, and he's actually seems to have embraced that idea of playing special teams.
Doesn't mean he's good at them.
Doesn't mean he's good at them. Exactly right. And Ryan Whalen, unfortunately, in the punt game the other night, kind of got blown up and allowed a block punt to take place. Now, he's probably, I don't even say probably, he is the best pure receiver of those three. He's not as athletic as Kobe Hamilton, but Kobe's as athletic as the day is long, can't catch it. And that's a problem. You got to be able to catch the football, and he's really struggled. Yeah. Cost him the other night.
Kobe Hamilton, I mean, file this under lines that will not help you make a team. 13 targets, 2 receptions for 11 yards.
At least two drops.
2 drops and contest. You have to be able to make contested catches. What do I hear Marvin Lewis talk about more than anything when it comes to receiver position? Winning 50-50 balls.
Well, yeah.
Make contested catches. I haven't seen him make a one. Not in a game.
Not in camp either. He missed a bunch in camp as well with that. That was the thing that stood out to me watching him is every ball in which there's a chance to make a play, Mohamed Sanu makes the play. A.J. Green makes the play. Even Brandon Tate has made the play. Kobe Hamilton just has not made the play. And that goes on top of the other night. You know, it's 4th and 6, not the greatest pass in the world, slightly behind him from Matt Scott, but I'm telling you, A.J. Green catches that ball, Mohamed Sanu catches that ball, Ryan Whalen catches that ball, and it goes ricocheting off Kobe Hamilton's hands, and you turn the ball over on downs.
Yep.
Again, out of the 13 targets, the 2 catches, in fairness, he was not playing with the most accurate quarterbacks in the world. But at the same time, some of that's on him, too. Maybe he wasn't in the right spot a couple of times either. He kind of admitted that to me, as I need to be better, make myself more available to quarterbacks.
Yep.
Some of that's on him.
A lot of it's on him. So, but here's the thing about Kobe Hamilton. He has practice squad eligibility.
He does, correct. But I've got a feeling as athletic as he is, Paul.
You think somebody would pick him up? Do you think they wouldn't run the game tape of that Jets game?
I don't know. I just think he's just got enough athleticism that if you're a team that is down to 4 wideouts and you just have nothing else in your camp, I'd take the kid just because of his athletic ability and say, hopefully the light bulb goes off.
And to me, at that point, the Bengals say, okay.
Right. Oh, yeah, no question.
So be it. Are you going to do? Right. But if he doesn't get picked up, boom.
Oh, he's back on the practice.
He's right there in the practice
squad. You just hope eventually it all comes together for him. Yeah. Because if it does, I think he can be a great receiver, but you got to catch the ball first. Now, that brings us to Ryan Whalen, who's an interesting cat.
Old pesky Ryan Whalen, who everyone writes off and no one is excited with because, he's, to quote Mike Brown, steady Eddie.
Yeah, and those usually aren't the ones that wow the fans. He caught 4 passes the other night, albeit in the fourth quarter.
He will play hard. He will know everything. He's typically a good special teams player.
Yeah.
He can do a lot of things for you that way. As far as reliability if you're looking for a reliable receiver, the coaches just – I mean, just like the guy.
Here's the
they
funny
just do.
Part
There's a reason
that.
He's been here this long.
We're talking about him as a guy at the very bottom of that wide receiver group of possibly getting cut. If it was me – so I'm not speaking for the coaches. I'm speaking for myself. if Sanzenbacher, let's say, is hurt for an extended period of time and you're looking to who's going to fill the slot, it ain't James Wright right now. It's not Brandon Tate. I would put Ryan Whalen and say, hey, you're the next guy up in that circumstance. You play the slot. So if you're talking about in those, in that vein, if that's what the coaches would be talking about in that vein, you almost have to think about keeping him.
Yeah. If depending on what happens with Dane, I think that affects your decision. Mm-hmm. Certainly. I mean,
who would you if cause, I cause who would you put in a slot right now if Dane
Giovanni came? Bernard.
Okay, well maybe.
I would split out Tyler Eifert or
but
or
if, he's, if he's dinged up and can't, right.
You go a lot of different directions talking about injuries, but to me I would just, you know, you could move him out there more often anytime you did have to go into that with Jeremy Hill in the back.
But out of that receiving group, out of Tate, just as a receiver now, out of Tate, Hamilton, James Wright and him, Ryan Whalen, which receiver would you say right now you would trust to put on the field?
I'd trust Brandon Tate over Ryan Whalen. I think he could do more for you.
Okay.
Which is
I'm going to disagree with that, but okay.
We're not talking about you know.
Well, okay, so if
no one's overwhelmed.
If you use your no, you're right. If you use your argument though, then Ryan Whalen gets cut.
Yeah. I think so. I just think that the back end of that receiver room will give you value on special teams.
No quote. James Wright wins that battle.
Yeah. Let's move. We could talk about that all day. Let's go offensive line. Okay. Here's what you've got. You've got Andrew.
Let's go starters first.
Yeah, starters. Andrew Whitworth, Kevin Zeitler, Russell Bodine, Clint Bowling, Andre Smith. These are your
five.
Starters.
That's five.
Mike Pollock.
Because of his versatility.
He'll be your backup at center and at both guards.
At both
spots.
Guards. Exactly.
He's your number
first
one
guy.
Backup
no
for
question.
All three of those.
No question.
Marshall Newhouse, who will be your swing tackle, a.k.a. Anthony Collins.
And he's played both in camp.
Yes.
I don't know if he's played both in a game. I don't think he's played both in a game, but he's played both during camp sessions. So.
And then Trey Hopkins, who's your undrafted guy out of Texas who played guard.
Started the first preseason game.
Now, I won't necessarily slam dunk him in there.
I wouldn't either, because I don't think if you put him out there, I don't think a team knows enough about Trey Hopkins to scoop him up.
Yeah.
So I think if worst comes to worst, you can reclaim him for practice squad.
I think Trey Hopkins is on the bubble, and Tanner Hawkinson. Those are guys I have in. Out right now, I have Will Zvitek.
And you only have – so you're keeping nine, which is I think what they'll keep.
I think that's the number.
I agree with you.
Will Zvitek, who has been starting at tackle with both tackles down. Chandler Burton, who's already been cut. Trevor Robinson, and Dan France, and TJ Johnson. So to me, you have Hawkinson, Svitek, and Trey Hopkins,
you know,
three for two.
Yeah, and I misspoke. Actually, Marshall Newhouse did start at right tackle on Saturday night. So he's played left tackle in place of Whitworth.
He can do both. So you get into you need versatility out of these last three guys. Tanner Hawkinson brings you versatility. Will Svitek
is just a tackle.
He's a tackle, and so. You know, I don't know what he really brings you. I mean,
I'm with you. I the only thing is
Tanner Hawkinson can play tackle.
Will Svitek has started on a couple of now again. So this is injury. He started on a couple of decent. He started on a Falcons playoff team. He started on a New England Patriots playoff team, albeit because of injury sliding in there to play. That tells me he's got some level of ability, right?
It does. I mean, he's a veteran of the league. I mean, it's not like he's a new kid. He's not a new kid on the block.
And
so.
I'm with you in the fact I don't think you keep just a pure tackle other than one pure tackle, and that's Marshall Newhouse. So actually, believe me, he played some guard in college, so he could actually maybe slide in there if you had to in a pinch.
Hawkinson's played tackle. Correct. And you know, been, I don't know, maybe he hasn't been okay.
Whatever four backups you're keeping, I would suggest those four, you have to play multiple spots.
Yeah. So maybe it's Hawkinson and Svitek and Hopkins goes to the practice squad.
Maybe.
Maybe that's the way it breaks down. But, I mean, those three guys are kind of battling out. That will play itself out over the last two games. I can tell you that much. You will see plenty of snaps for those three for the team to try to make a decision because there's a lot of guys that can change with the way the second and third teams have played, which is terribly.
The most interesting one to me is you've got Trevor Robinson out, right?
I do. You think he could go in?
I don't, because I think Pollock, again, gives you versatility, and that's the circus. Now, we saw Trevor play a little bit of guard in some practice settings.
Yeah. I think they're trying him out to see if he can do that. It doesn't seem to be happening for him. I don't see...
Well, and you drafted over top of him, so, I mean, you drafted over top of him for a reason, didn't you?
Yeah, exactly. And knowing that you also had Mike Pollock who could do that.
Right,
so I just think he's the odd man out. It's unfortunate. But I just don't think it works out for him. So there it is. That's the offense.
And it's in flux. It's funny. I mean, if we'd have done this on Thursday of last week, maybe Wednesday of last, when we did the podcast last week, the injury circumstances really hit hard.
Yeah,
and make things kind of.
And there will be more.
And I want to bring that point up just for a second. And I'm a big theory guy. I got weird theories. You're going to find this out over time. I've just come up with just my own weird little things. The fact that you just don't hit in camp like you used to hit, I just don't know if players are ready for that. I really don't. And I think you saw it the other day. Some of it may have been over, I guess, protecting players. Could Jeremy have Hill gone back in if it was a regular season game? Maybe, because he was declared out after the shoulder injury. Could James Wright have gone out if it was a regular season game? Maybe, because we saw Jeremy Hill back at practice today, so it couldn't have been that severe what happened to him. But I just wonder, just the lack of physical contact, if that doesn't add up when you get into some of these games.
Yeah, I think there's a piece of that. I think they need to have a little more physical camp.
I do too.
I think they've been backing off and so worried about injury that you flip to the other side of the spectrum.
And then the injuries.
And the injuries happen because you guys aren't ready for it. But you know, they can't. Two more games with the onslaught of injuries like they saw in this one, and you could have a lot of questions and a lot of problems that you're worried about, which brings us to the depth of this team. I mean, to me, it's not as deep as it has been. It was last year by a little bit, but what we saw there, which is why the coaches are concerned, is such a significant fall off when the starters came out. That you have to have at least some concern about that.
Not across the board, though.
No.
I mean, you've got a handful of spots to be able to plug some guys in and still feel okay. I would feel okay if Marshall Newhouse had to play extended time at tackle. I wouldn't feel, you know, overjoyed at it, but you know what? He's not going to kill you. Is he Andre Smith and is he Witt? No. That's why he's a backup. But I can live with him playing. I think he's okay. But yeah, for some parts after that, man, you start to. I mean, we're talking about a wide receiver. We're talking about if something's really wrong with Sanzenbacher, and hopefully it's not. We're talking about we can't figure out who to stick in the slot right now, right?
Right. Yeah, you're exactly right. So receiver is a position where there could be some serious questions coming up here. I mean, we thought it was deep, but when you have guys that just don't look as good as you'd hope they would, it brings up a lot of questions. Well, we got to wrap it. I think we got to wrap it if for all of you still awake out there. That's our offense. Let's look at the offense. So next week we're going to go defense, and we'll talk all about what's going on there and whatever the heck happens.
And our shortest show of the year will be the special team show.
Yes.
For the specialist show.
The specialist show, yes. We'll tell you that those three guys are making the team, and that'll be the end of it. I will be flying back from Arizona, so we'll do our best to get it up as soon as we can for you to listen to on Tuesday. So keep an eye out for that. And then, we'll have our game preview. It'll be the next week after that. We'll be talking about Baltimore.
But again, don't forget, coming up
on the 26th.
Duke
Tobin, Beyond the Stripes at Moreline Lager House. Come on down there. Of course, much thanks to Joseph Auto Group, josephauto.com, sponsor of Scribe Session, and also Beyond the Stripes. Loving having them on board. And so that's where we're at. We take some music to take us out here. We need some music to take us out here. What do you think? What are we going to do?
Something about Hurt Me So Bad, some kind of song like that.
Hurt So Good?
Yeah.
Ooh. Maybe Hurt So Good?
Hurt So Good.
That's from your area.
It is.
A little Coug?
Yeah.
All right, we'll do that. We'll do a little Hurt So Good as everybody recovers. Everybody's in the tub trying to work themselves off. So
we go in the tub. We do a little Hollywood hot tub.
I think we'll stick with you for now. All right, so thanks to everybody for listening to Scribe Session. We'll be talking to you next week.